Welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. Shaping Portsmouth is a collaboration of key Portsmouth businesses, transforming Portsmouth together. Hello and welcome to another Shaping Portsmouth podcast with me, CEO Dave Humphreys. And today I am joined by Steve Squires of Odigo Driving School. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So quite often we have guests from partner businesses or community events or things like that. For a change today, we've got you in as a local small business owner. And obviously from the name, people will have worked out. You're a driving instructor.
That's right, yeah.
But you're in our small business community and linked into shaping through that. But I want to before we talk about driving instruction and all the fun that comes with that, let's go back into your past. Okay. And somewhere I always like to start. Do you come from Portsmouth originally?
I don't. I'm actually from Leicester in the Midlands originally.
Okay,
yeah, born and bred.
So what brought you to Portsmouth?
So I was in a position where my dad lives in the Isle of Wight. And we were coming down here 3-4 times a year. At the time, it was myself, my wife, and my little son. We just enjoyed coming down to the beach, coming down to the coast. And so there was that thought, should we come live down here? We initially lived in the Isle of Wight. I lived in the Isle of Wight for 3 years.
Yeah.
But the Isle of Wight's pretty limited. And what we started to do was more and more come off to Portsmouth. So we switched it around. The job opportunities were better here. We stayed in Portsmouth and I visit my dad still to this day. I'm actually going next weekend over to the Isle of Wight. So that's what brought me here.
Interesting. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And have you always been a driving instructor?
No, I haven't. So after university, I went to university, did politics. I worked in banks, in banks for 2 years. The first year was on phones, answering customers. And then the second year was more the office type stuff. It was in more the regional offices rather than the actual branches. So that's what I did before. And then I went into teaching. I was a teacher for about 16 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Where was that?
So I started in Leicester. Obviously did a PGC to start with. That was at Leicester University. About 3, 4, 5, 6 years down in Leicester. And then the opportunity came to come here. Worked in the Isle of Wight for 4 years. Worked in Bay House in Gosport. And then a school in Southampton called the Greg School.
Right.
Which is a private school. All over.
And what did you teach?
My main subject's history. But over time, I've taught many, many subjects. I enjoyed the teaching. I didn't really go up. I was head of department for a little bit, but I actually enjoyed the teaching. I liked being in the classroom.
Yeah.
And I, as time went on, would just teach anything, really, just to fill the timetable. You know, generally, people who are in the subject stay in it, whereas I quite enjoyed doing different humanities, did maths, English, PE, whatever, really, just to enjoy the teaching.
Wow. So Was history a passion for you anyway, or you just thought, right, I'm going to be a teacher, what would I teach? Oh, let's do history.
History's always been something I really enjoy from when I was young. I love still to this day going to museums and learning about history. Obviously, it's become a lot easier now with the internet than it was.
Definitely.
Obviously, with my degree, it had to be a subject that was relatively connected. And politics isn't really something you do a PGC in. So history was my smaller subject that I did at university. So, teaching history. And it's where my passion lies. Still to this day, I still keep that passion. So I make models. That's one of my hidden little secrets. So I make model tanks and planes and things. It's my little hour to myself. I just sit and build little things like that. I'm involved with a group called Models for Heroes, which is a charity. So I run a session once a month here, and that's for predominantly aimed at people from the forces, the armed forces, but also emergency services. But then come along, just make models, and it was found that that allowed people to talk. So I've sort of taken it into that. But that's where my history love came from as a youngster, making these models, and it's just sort of grown from there.
Did you get many people come to that?
Not really at the minute.
No, sort
of nationally, it's growing.
So it's a national thing?
Yeah, yeah, it's a national charity.
And you're just sort of doing it locally?
Yeah, I need to probably get it out there a bit more, I think. I've been talking to Tom Burgess, Save Warrior, about maybe doing something over in Fareham as well with him. And again, it's just, I think the community of the armed forces is they're sort of quite a community. It's getting into that community. I'm not from the armed forces, so it's just finding my way in, really.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, sounds interesting. So that's quite a change. In fact, banking to teaching is quite a change. I suppose teaching to becoming a driving instructor, there's an obvious natural... You're teaching people still.
Connection there, yeah.
There's an obvious connection.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, teaching to driving school owner, because it's not just about the teaching, is it?
That's right.
Is probably a much bigger jump. So what made you switch from teaching to becoming a driving instructor?
I think I'm always someone that's wanted to learn. I like learning. Mm. I like learning new things. And I really enjoyed, and I did enjoy, but there comes a point for me where teaching wasn't achieving what I wanted for me, in that education's changed. It's changed a lot. And I went into education to help children, and, you know, that's what education's about to me. I think with Ofsted and data and those kind of things, education's changed a lot, certainly since I started back in 2000. And it just was no longer for me. And it's an incredibly demanding job.
Yeah.
I've got absolute respect for anyone that does teaching, anyone involved in schools. But it's a very difficult job to do if you are not passionate about it. And my passion went a little bit, I think, with all that. And I was tired. I was ready for a change. I was a bit burnt out. And so I was looking for something, and it sounds really silly. I actually went to the school careers advisor as a teacher. Can I have an appointment? And sat down with them and said, I want to do something. I kind of have an idea of where I want to go in terms of me, but I just don't know what career fits that.
See, I remember those careers lessons back at school. They go, you'd fill out some survey, and it says, right, you should consider being a chef.
A tractor driver.
Did they make you do one of those?
No, thankfully, no. I think she was quite pleased to have an adult in front of her. Actually, she could talk and she could, you know, think a bit differently. But it was just more of an informal chat. I sort of knew she was, obviously, I'd met her before. But that kind of... just opened me up a little bit to what I could do. And I don't know where the idea came from. I think I must have stumbled across an advert somewhere or something. I thought, ooh, that would work. And it's finding a career that will take your skills forward, but also develop skills, isn't it? And I was at a point in my life where I was fed up with being told what to do. Yeah. I wanted to be self-employed. I wanted to be my own boss and take something in a direction that I wanted to go and do it in the way I wanted to do. Yeah. I was ready for that move at that point. So it just fell right.
Was that a bit of a grass is greener on the other side?
Probably,
naivety before you realised all the trauma that comes with being a self-employed business owner.
Thing is, you've got strengths, you've got weaknesses, and you want to... you know, build your strengths, but also you're going to face your weaknesses. And there's a bit I didn't realise is how much of me that would expose. I think when you work in a company, you can hide to a certain point and play to your strengths a lot more and delegate the weaknesses. But you can't do that on your own. For me, I can be a bit of a softie, or I certainly was. It was surprising coming as a teacher, but I'm naturally empathetic, and that's the way I kind of work. And I've had to be quite strong with people, which, you know, before, if I got to that point, I could just say, oh, you need to talk to the head of the department or someone, you know. In the banking, the same. I could defer it to someone else. It was me. The book stopped with me. If something was going wrong, I had to deal with it. I had to find the time. I had to organise myself and get that right. I think the big shocker for me, I think, was the salary. I'd had a salary all my life. I'd had every month my money comes in, I pay my bills, I've got that much left, boom. And suddenly I remember the first month, I was obviously still salaried. So I was incredibly lucky that I went into a franchise who gave me a full diary straight off. But the second month, I wasn't ready for that. No one had told me about saving your tax. that was never mentioned, you know, planning ahead. I used to look at my money and think, oh, well, I've got these lessons next week, so that's how much I'm getting. Yeah. Well, it all changes over the weekend, you know. Oh, my gosh, 10 of them have cancelled, you know, or someone hasn't turned up and all my money's all changed again. All my bills were set for the first. So now I have to spread everything out because money can really fluctuate, you know. So it was a big learning curve, but I enjoy the learning. So as hard as it's been fun.
So, yeah, we'll come back to some of those sort of business challenges in a bit. But I'm still quite tickled about you going into the careers office at school. That's quite amusing. Yeah. But at that point, was driving something that particularly interested you? Did you, or was it just, you know, I can drive, so I could do that, or I really love driving, or I think I'm the best driver on the planet? You know?
I don't believe anyone's a good driver in the whole sense. Everyone has areas of, no one's perfect.
Yeah.
We all like to think we're good drivers, but and even as instructors, we're not perfect, you know. So I think I've always enjoyed motorsport. Motorsport's a big passion of mine. Right. I go round. I go to Donington, Silverstone, Thruxton, wherever it is, and watch motorsport. So I've always loved cars. I've loved custom cars and anything to do with cars. I think probably in the back of my head, I part-taught my ex-wife to drive.
Right.
And I suppose I'd had that little bit of experience where I sat in the passenger seat with someone that was inexperienced and kind of actually was all right with it, which I find most people are very Marmite. Either they can either do it or they can't. Right. There's no grey area with it. And some people are amazing. They'll sit with their sons, daughters, and they can do that very well. They're very relaxed. And some people are just so stressed in it. And luckily I was of the relaxed nature that I enjoy it, you know. I have some scary moments, but I enjoy it.
I'm sure. It's interesting. And in fact, it's some... Yeah, there's probably something you should probably never watch a Grand Prix and then get straight into a car, should you?
No, that's like right.
You suddenly feel like you're Nigel Mansell. But I always remember day one of my police response and pursuit course when I sort of my first proper big driving course in police, doing high speed driving, and you kind of think, you know, I've got onto the course, I'm a good driver. It was quite an elite thing back then. Not everyone got it, and you turn up on day one and they ask you to do a demonstration drive, and then you have to sit through the indignity of the instructor shredding. You know, and I did this, what I thought was this great drive through the Hampshire countryside, and and then got torn to pieces. And then day two, you're on the curbside and it's pulling away and into second gear and pull over, and you're thinking, hang on, what are you doing? I've been driving for years. And it's all about the system. Yeah. And they kind of deconstruct everything you do and start again. So it's quite interesting. So I get where you're coming from in terms of...
One of the really humbling thing, I think, for people of our age is that we never did a theory test.
Yeah.
So as to train as an instructor, I had to do a theory test. And I'll be honest, I went into it like, I can drive. I've been driving for 25 years or whatever, 20 years. And I walked in, didn't do any... First thing I did it before I even booked on the training. And I failed it first time. It's changed a hell of a lot. And no one checks that you're checking. So I had to go away and work at it. And it's probably a really good thing, because then it gave me that drive then to make, well, I've got to do this properly. I can't just bumble along as I was and hope that, you know, I'm a driver, I can do it. You know?
Yeah. We had the same, and, you know, right at the start of that course, you had to pass a theory test, and they start doing the road signs.
Yeah.
Of course, you think, I don't need to learn them. I know road signs. They're obvious.
Yeah.
And the first one that comes up is a blue square with a white arrow in. Yeah. And you think, oh, and then the second one is a blue circle with a white arrow in. Yeah. And that's when you think, oh, no. Now I'm in trouble.
I was shown, it was a sign, and my trainer opened the highway code and went, what's this sign? And I'd never seen that sign before. Yeah. Trams.
Wow.
We don't have trams in the south. I don't have to deal with trams because I need to know them. So,
yeah. So, You've made the decision that you're going to be a driving instructor. Was that be a driving instructor, or were you really clear that you wanted your own driving school, your own business?
Oh, I want to be. Yeah, but I wanted that. Yeah,
but you start with a franchise to get the initial training and the client workload.
generally, there's two ways of training. One is to go to a big school. So I went to the AA, there's BSM, RED, Build Plan. They will do your training package. And what they will do is they'll tie you into a, after you've passed kind of contract, which I did. The other way is to go to a local person who will do it hour by hour, a local instructor. So I can train people to be instructors.
Yep.
You don't get any different training for that. You know, you do it, you train people. So I went down the route of the big companies. I did it with AA. Took about a year. I was still working whilst doing that on top. which worked, actually. And what I did, in the end, I dropped to supply teaching just to give me a bit more time to give me that sort of flexibility to do it. And yeah, so I dropped into a franchise for, I probably that was about 6 months in the end. I was in the franchise after I finally passed the third and final test. And yeah. And then as soon as that finished, I was out. I wanted to get my own business.
I'm guessing that the franchise, you've still not got the consistency of salary.
No.
But you've got more of a guaranteed client list.
No. They don't guarantee you getting anyone. No.
Are they feeding you clients?
They do, but they don't guarantee that.
No.
You've still got to go out and find people yourself. Right. You're paying really in effect for, they'll give you a car, the insurance. It's a good way of starting. Mm. But they're doing the marketing.
Yep.
You have a bigger base of people coming in.
Yeah.
But they don't guarantee that. And what you're doing is paying them a franchise fee every week, which, you know, is quite sizable. I think I was paying about £200 to £250 a week for that.
So you're paying a fee, not a percentage?
No, it's usually a fee, yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah, that's a pressure. You've got to pay that, and they want that money, you know, every week, whether you're working or not.
And there's obviously then a point in time where you break away from the franchise and you go out on your own.
Yep.
So that's where you set up Odigo.
Odigo. Actually, I initially called myself South Sea Driving Driving Academy, I think I called it. So for the first year, I did some work with a business coach from Action Coaching.
Yeah.
And we talked about, because my next stage would be to franchise, but South Sea's rather limited as a name. So I looked for another name. Just something that was a bit more generic in terms of, you know, it didn't matter where you were, that was quite local. Someone I knew worked in marketing and they made me a bigger list of names and I just went through these names and went, I tried to find something that's original. You know, there's lots of things you can play on driving, but this one stood out. So, yeah.
Okay. So there's no, because that's what I was thinking, there must be some sort of quite personal story behind the name.
And no, not at all. Simple as that.
Turns out you just picked it off a list.
The word go is what stood out.
The go,
I like that one. Yeah. So it's Greek for driving instructing. For instructing primarily, yeah. So it was just plain words.
yeah, interesting. So how daunting was that, setting out on your own? Or not, was it?
Yeah, it was.
That naivety, you know, don't know what you needed to be worried about.
A little bit of both, really. I was excited and, you know, I went straight out and I had to get a car, I had to get insurance, all these things I hadn't.
Yeah.
You know, I'd worked out in my head what I thought, and you do your research. So it was exciting to get my first car, you know, it was leased. Most instructors either go down one route, or you see either lease or I've always leased up until this year. Just takes away a bit of the pressure of servicing and looking after the car. Getting the insurance. It was getting all those things in place. And when I moved, obviously, the students I had were not with me. They weren't my students. They were AA students. So they could have all stayed with the AA and they had the option. And luckily, most of them came with me because suddenly could have had an empty diary. But again, all the marketing then suddenly became mine. I had to get myself out there. But again,
so how do you approach doing that? How did you did you have a plan or was it?
This is what they don't teach you. They teach me how to drive in Instruct. They don't actually teach me to run a business. That was never.
And this is the trouble. You've gone from you've gone from being a driving instructor to now being managing director, head of accounts.
I think it's a book I read.
Chief marketer.
Is it The E Myth? I think it's the book.
Yeah.
And it was something. There's a part in that that says. You there's two kinds of entrepreneurs. You're either someone who has a skill and tries to run a business, or you're someone that can run a business and then finds a skill. Yeah. And I was very much a skill trying to run a business. And I made some big mistakes on, you know, early on. I can tell you one funny. So I actually naively spent a couple of £1,000 on a board at Portsmouth Football Club. Brilliant. Local people. Got no response whatsoever. Didn't get a single person from it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you try these things, don't you? And I like that part of it. Mm. I like the... I could go down the normal, just do what everyone else does kind of route. And let's try something different, you know? if I'm here, I may as well.
But it was nice going to Fratton Park.
Yeah, I got a few tickets from it. Yeah. Seeing it on the back stand, on the other stand. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'd be over the moon.
It was the smallest board there, probably. Right. I didn't have a lot of money to throw into it, so, you know.
Yeah.
I took my friend with me, see if he can spot my board.
So since then, obviously you've built your business up, you've kind of, you know, learnt from the mistakes, and COVID clearly
huge impact
in the middle of that. How painful was that?
Very. I'd been running my own business for 6 months at that point. I was self-employed for 6 months. In terms of tax year, I've probably been doing it for about a year at that point, I think. But the previous tax year was 6 months.
Yeah.
We were specifically named as an industry. You are not working. Stop.
Yeah.
Obviously, in a very confined space, it was not going to happen. My car sat outside my house for 3-4 months, did nothing, didn't move. As we all did, we stayed in, didn't we? Yeah, there was no help really. There was grants. They came quite late. I maxed out my credit. I remember maxing my credit card out, and thinking, oh my god, it's getting a bit dire. You know, and then the grants I got, but I only got 6 months equivalent, so I got half of what I could get. And it was survival for me personally. I was in a flat on my own, worrying about money all the time. And I think whilst I imagine a lot of people enjoyed some of the freedoms of, for me, it was a stressful time. I just stressed. I wasn't far enough into the business to really know what to do. I think that was the hardest thing. I think had I been 2 years later, 3 years later, I'd have gone, right, that's it, I need to do this. Yeah. I'd have had a bit of money set aside. I'd have had ideas. Mm. I wasn't ready for that at all. So it was quite stressful. And I'm very fortunate to have had some friends and family who kept me going really through that.
Mm. But out the other side.
Yep.
Absolutely. Survived it.
Yeah. A lot didn't. A lot fell off. A lot fell off.
I can believe that.
Yeah, I had to pay for my car still and my insurance. And, so, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose looking back on that whole journey, what is the bit of support or help that you would have liked to have had that you didn't?
That's a good question. I don't know that, I mean, there might well have been, but I don't know there was any kind of, I'd love some business support. Knowing what I know now with networking and groups like that, if I'd had that support back then, I'd have been, people would have come forward with ideas. And I think one of the things I like about the whole networking kind of coaching thing is finding out how other businesses work. Because it's very easy to get into your own business and just do what you do and not think that bigger picture. And if I'd known more about other businesses and how they worked, had that kind of support, I could have probably done a lot more with my time, and had all that time then. I wish I had that time now.
I mean, obviously, we mentioned right at the start that, that obviously you're part of our kind of small business network, and I think we identified you kind of first tapped into that through the Jody Goodchild workshop in the Guildhall that we ran.
Yep, that's right.
But I mean, that's just one little bit, and I suppose it's we see a lot of people with a penny drop moment when they, you know, kind of realize what they can actually do in terms of lead generation properly through LinkedIn. We probably see when we run the Action Coach workshops, we see similar penny drop moments with things like the finance and the basics around sort of discount and tax and stuff. But what other support apart from those Jody Goodchild workshops that we run have you tapped into locally?
Oh gosh, not as much as I probably should. I've done the digital MOT. That was very good. I'm not very tech savvy, I'll be honest. It's not my strength. And always with these things, you find your weaknesses and then you need to work on them. Alex O'Neill's brilliant at these things. She just looked at my whole plethora of disjointed bits of technology. You know, I've got kind of Facebook and Instagram. Yeah. I've got a web page, which wasn't very good. But for me, one of the hardest things I think that people maybe don't realise is that I'm probably in the car during the day, maybe 10, 12 hours, depending on the day. I can't answer messages. I can't do anything. I'm driving. I'm either driving with a student, I'm watching them, my phone's off, or I'm between lessons when I can make phone calls maybe on hands-free, but that's about it. I can't sit and tap at any point. So to be able to have someone sit down and say, we can set these things up, they'll do it all for you. It's, you know, it's amazing. That's been really, really good to deal with inquiries, and I'm building a new web page now that's going to do a lot more than what I could do. So that's definitely a
because that's that that's the trouble, isn't it? There's this perception that you know, all the time I'm not out in the car teaching, I'm not earning money.
Exactly.
But actually,
that,
if your leads dry up, so it you know, you have to invest in doing those tasks.
For me, the more things I can get to run without me having to do too much to them, the better.
Yeah,
and meeting people. I mean, there's some amazing people out there that do brilliant things, and just having those conversations, or I can help you with that, or I can do that, and you know, those little things really, really help. So I've got Charlie Ruttle, who's now dealing with my diary.
Yeah,
you know, that again lifts a massive pressure. I'm a terror for stacking my day. One of my weaknesses is when you've got customers and you're seeing them every week and I'm buying into them. That's part of my job. I buy into them. I get to know them. I get to know where they want to go. And if they say, oh, can you move this to there? Or can we fit one in here? My tendency is go, yeah. And I'll sort it. And it's the detriment of me. I don't look after myself very well sometimes. So to have someone to check that and just say, right, you need a lunch break today. you can't do that many lessons. Let me deal with that person. That makes a huge difference.
And I suppose that's the other interesting piece around that small business bit, which is the self-care and the time for not just well-being, but the time to have a break, the time to look at CPD and growing. Because I would imagine, you know, you've got legislation changes and things that you've got to keep up with, particularly. I can't imagine, you know, not knowing too much about the sort of tests and the rules and the things around that these days. But I would imagine, like most other sectors, it changes every 10 minutes. So you have to
keep on top of it. Yeah. we've just had a massive change in Portsmouth, which is the test centre's moved.
Right.
And it was really sudden. So it was on top of the hill, which everyone knows. It's now at the Marriott Hotel, which means all the routes have changed. Our in and outs have changed. Our routines have changed. And what we're quite fortunate. I think most driver instructors are pretty friendly with each other. We have WhatsApp groups, we have Facebook groups between instructors in Portsmouth. Funnily enough, I'm out tonight. We're going for a meal, a few of his instructors. Because actually it's quite a lonely industry because you're on your own most of the day. So to keep in contact with them, they know what's going on. They were feeding information so we can keep on top of things. We've got a local association as well that, you know, that's the first place the test centre will go to, because actually getting information is really difficult.
That's quite interesting. That's a really good example of my ethos of community over competition. In that you are all in competition with each other as independent driving instructors, but actually by supporting each other, you help yourselves all stay stronger. I think
most of us are pretty good at kind of not treading on each other's toes. We've all got different areas or skills, or I've referred people to people. You know, they might work a different day to me, or, you know, they might be automatic. I don't do automatic, I do manual. So, yeah, there's a referral system within the whole thing as well, which works well for the industry, I think.
But the test, so I didn't realise the test centre had moved, to be fair.
No, it was only literally 2 weeks ago,
Didn't know that at all. Thought it was still on the top of the hill. And I'm just thinking, so you come out of the test centre on the hill, and although it's quite a quick road along the hill, it's reasonably quiet and yep. and sensible. It's a nice place to start your test.
That's
to
right.
ease yourself into it. Mm-hmm. Whereas down by the Marriott,
it's horrendous. Yeah,
you're straight out onto the Southampton yep. Road, which is in some places three lanes in one yeah. way, and traffic yeah. lights everywhere, always busy.
Yep.
And you've probably got the most horrendous traffic light junction. At
yeah, it's horrible, isn't it? Yeah. And they come out. Of course, you go in the front, but the back. When they come out the back to Tesco.
Yeah.
And they can go either way from there. Yeah. So, yeah, it's what we would. Our job is to teach people to drive and drive safely. It's not to pass a test.
Yeah,
that's not what we're about. Obviously, you've got to pass a test as part of that. So we will drive around the areas where the tests are just to get them familiar. Well, that's had to all change. We're at that junction near the Marriott, the crossroads you're talking about. You know, at points is five lanes. We've got to get them in the. You know, go around. You'll see a lot of learners around there at the minute trying to get hold of. Each direction, how that's going to work. So, yeah.
yeah. And you only need one decent accident anywhere in the city.
Yep.
And that junction clogs up.
Yep.
The
examiner said that they have had an issue where tests are about 30 to 40 minutes.
Yeah.
They were doing 50 to 55 on the first couple of days because they just couldn't get in and out as quickly. Yeah. So they've had to change all their routes and what they do as well. So wow. they're under pressure as well at the minute. So it's yeah,
interesting one.
Yeah.
Okay. So but I suppose just coming back to that point around tests and pass rates, and obviously it's you know got to be about teaching people to drive above.
Oh yeah.
The results, and it goes all the way back to that point you made about being a teacher and why you left and being results driven over. You know, losing the enjoyment for what you were trying to achieve. But that's still got to be important to you, that pass rate.
Oh, gosh, yeah. It's important in many ways. I mean, like I say, the first thing is I buy into that person. I'm on that journey. Yeah. It upsets me if they don't pass.
Yeah.
you know, it's not just, oh, you didn't pass, let's get on with it. I get upset, with it. And equally, I get overjoyed. I had someone pass a couple of weeks ago. Mm. It was a 4-year journey to get there.
Wow.
It was amazing, you know. And that's what you do it for.
That's great.
The weird thing for us, I suppose, is once they pass the test, you don't ever... There's no upsell from there. That's it.
Yeah.
you've spent however many months or years in the car with someone every week, and then they're gone.
They've gone.
Just like that. And it's normally a routine as well. It's normally the same time every week.
So
going back to tests. Yeah. So it's important to us as instructors as well, because we get monitored on it.
Mm.
And I don't think people maybe realise that. As a part of our job, we have a license.
Mm.
We have to do the training for that. We get a license. The pass rate for a driving instructor from start to finish is around about 20%. Most drop out or don't get through.
Right.
It's quite a stressful thing to do.
Yeah.
And then every 4 years, you have to retake it.
Yeah.
And theoretically, and in reality, for some, you could lose your business. You get 3 attempts to redo that test. Quite rightly, you should have kept your CPD up and you should be. But it's as stressful for us as it is for a student doing their test. So
especially
we're monitored on it.
It's your entire livelihood.
Exactly.
That you lose overnight.
It will literally be in that minute. Yeah. And like the driving test, the decision's made there and then.
Yeah.
I go in and I come out, I've passed or I failed.
Yes.
So it's a weird thing where. The student goes into the test, it's their test, and I'm, but equally that has an impact on me.
Mm. And I was kind of thinking just in terms of marketing, being able to say, Odigo driving school pass rate of 80% or whatever
it is. Out of my hands at that point when they're in the test.
Yeah.
And statistically, they can give you, most people fail because of mirrors or the reality is most people fail because of nerves. And that's a big part of our job isn't just the driving, it's the mental, the confidence, it's the judgments. And I've been in, as instructors, we can sit in the back in tests and I can sort of get in and I know you're not driving how you normally will. Here we go. It's going to be one of those, what's it called, the rabbit in headlights. They go. And once your adrenaline has started going, if the student isn't controlling that in the tests, the test's not going to go well. So you've got to teach them to above because they're never going to drive well in a test because they're nervous.
Mm.
But some people, will make huge errors and they can drive perfectly for weeks before. And then one moment, and that's it. And it's a quick moment. It's a quick decision. And that's it. You know, pulling out the roundabout is a 3 to 5 second decision.
Yeah.
And that can cost you it in 40 minutes of driving, where you've done it perfectly, one moment, and that's it, it's gone.
Absolutely.
So it's a really difficult thing to do, pass a driving test, I think, on the whole.
Yeah. So we've not even talked yet about just the day-to-day trauma of actually being sat in a car next to someone who can't drive.
And
the things that happen, the near misses, I'm guessing you must see some sights as well as having to deal with let's call it the ineptness of other road users.
Impatience, I think, is
impatience, ineptness.
Yeah, I'll be kind. I mean, I put a LinkedIn post on last week, funnily enough, about my job has been a risk assessment, and that is primarily what I spend most of my time thinking. I think there's a perception with some people, I get paid a lot of money to sit there and do nothing. I just get driven around.
Mm.
But reality is I'm constantly thinking. So I'm driving to see what the student's doing. I'm looking at them. I have to look at them, where they're looking, what they're looking at, what they're thinking. I'm talking to them. I'm watching all the other cars. I'm thinking about what's going down the road, what's ahead of us, where are we going, how am I going to get this person from not looking in their mirrors to looking in their mirrors in the next hour. You know, my mind's ticking, and it's a mentally draining job.
Yeah.
Physically, I don't really I go to the gym every morning because otherwise I wouldn't exercise. I'm just sat all day, and there's a lot of instructors who have health problems through sitting all day. It's not particularly great for you. But yeah, it's a mentally tiring job. It's very social. I'm sat with someone one-to-one all day.
Yeah.
So there's a drain in that way as well. So yeah, it's quite a tricky job. And then, like you say, you're trying to deal with everyone else, and they're unpredictable.
Mm.
To a certain extent, I can sort of predict what the person next to me is going to do because you get to know them and how they drive. Yeah. Everyone else. It's a shame. I had a scary moment a couple of weeks ago where I was at a junction. It's Crossroads at Brandsbury Park. You might know it.
Yeah, I know.
And we're turning right, so curving round where Brandsbury Park goes. And the person behind was impatient, and they undertook us going right. You know, my student had decided to move any to the right or had cut the corner, we'd have took him out.
Yeah.
But he just put his foot down and went around us, you know. Shall I tell you my scariest moment?
Go on.
It absolutely, there's not many, I'm pretty good. You've been scared. I had a lady, about 8 o'clock in the morning, we're at Bedhampton Crossroads at the train. And the barrier went up, we're at the front, and she lurched it and stalled it on the tracks. And I've never panicked so much in my life. To be stalled on a those barriers. Oh no!
At least the barriers were going up and not coming down.
But you never know with those trains. Either. Sometimes they go up and come back down. And she's starting to panic a little bit because she realised where she is.
Yeah.
The saving grace in our cars, we've got obviously the pedals, and I've got a clutch. So it was clutch. Yeah. I whacked it into a gear. Let's go. But that is the one moment I've really like. Oh my gosh. Been hit a couple of times as well. Generally, you'll find instructors' accidents are people hitting us because they try and predict, and most drivers are predictable. Learners aren't, and some people don't take that into account. So it's normally you're at a roundabout, quite right, the person who's second behind us is looking, oh, there's a gap, they'll go, and then they look around and realize we haven't gone, we're stalled, or they've decided not to, and I'm just in the back of you. I've had that a couple of times. Hilsey roundabout, usually.
Yeah, it's great. We could probably do a whole separate podcast between the two of us on scary driving moments.
That's right.
Because, sort of high-speed response in policing and the pursuits as well. I've had a few. And policing, it was always, especially if you ever found yourself in a situation where there were two of you in convoy, you would get the general public. They would let the first car through. They'd see the lights, hear the sirens, move over. First car would come through. They'd not spot there was another one coming through behind, so they'd move back out right in front of you, so you'd never want to be that second car. But we could do a whole podcast on driving
on the roads and how people drive.
It's really 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 interesting, and there's quite a lot I've learned here actually, about driving in the city, and it's good to hear that there's a sort of community of driving instructors supporting each other. I really, really like
you'll
that.
Wave at each other. I think people,
yeah,
like bus drivers and things.
It's funny, that's another emergency service thing. And, yeah. and after I retired from the police, it took me a while to get out of the habit of waving at ambulances.
Yeah,
because we always did that, and fire engines. But so we always like to finish the podcast with a little question to our guest about a recommendation of somewhere to go or something to do in Portsmouth.
Yeah.
So what would be your top tip for us of somewhere to go, something to do?
If I want to get away from things, you know, sometimes you do, you just want to go and just get away from things. I love walking around Porchester Castle. Brilliant place. And my top tip is the Salt Cafe.
Yeah.
If you know it.
Yeah.
It's hidden out the way. It's peaceful, it's quiet. You have a nice little walk and just sit there and just watch the world go by across the water. And I love that. I think one of the things that, from the Midlands, I'm from Leicester, the nearest bit of the sea that was ever near me was an hour and a half away. I really appreciate, I think, being near the sea. So I love walking along the coastings. But when you can sit and have a coffee and just watch the sea and the boats and things, I think that's amazing.
Lovely little spot up there.
Yeah,
but Portchester Castle in itself.
Yeah, history.
History. And I guess you've probably got to look back to the founding of the city, and that long before Portsmouth was Portsmouth, you had the Romans up at Portchester Castle.
Yeah.
And that would be their sort of their great port, ships coming in and all the way up to there, and then you've got the harbour silting over, so it becomes less fireball. And then the wonderful creation story of Port and his two sons landing at Old Portsmouth, but I don't think that's necessarily a true story. It's just someone looking
works
for
well,
some,
doesn't it?
Yeah, it works well, but the etymology around the name is Portsmouth. It's
so much
obvious
history here. You don't realise everything.
Yeah, it's a great little creation story, but Portchester, you know, right at the start of the history of the city, you know, that very first bit. It's wonderful, wonderful little place, Portchester Castle. And so I think you might be the second person in the sort of year and a bit that we've been doing these podcasts to mention the Salt Cafe. So
I do like a cafe.
Yeah.
There's many more I can mention, but you know, I go into far too many cafes again.
Yeah.
It's the joy of driving around all the time, isn't it?
Somewhere to stop.
Definitely.
Look, been really good chatting
Thank
to you.
Thank you for having me.
And, you know, hopefully we'll keep seeing you at those local networking events.
Absolutely.
And prominent in our small business community. But, you know, in the meantime, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
This podcast was brought to you by Shaping Portsmouth, working to make Portsmouth the number one UK city in which to invest, live, learn, work and visit. To find out more, please visit shapingportsmouth.co.uk. This podcast was supported by Spark Community Space and Portsmouth Community Lottery.